Julie Hayden, Truth Straight Up, for another great podcast. We're going to have the Sword of Soros on, who's going to explain everything about the Democratic primary in New Hampshire, where they go next.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, This is the Ask a Democrat segment of the show.
Yes, so. Ask a Democrat of the show.
Is that you, Ted? Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, he's already here. Later in the show, we'll go over the great meeting we had with the folks at the Arapahoe County Tea Party, which was very interesting. And we want to go over, you know, some other things, to sites you ought to look at. So with that, we want to introduce Sword of Soros, the man who came up, one of the architects of Blueprint Colorado, and so many other dastardly deeds. Ted Trimpa. Ted, great to talk to you.
It's great to be here. As a serpent, I just came out of the garden. So
there you go. Ted is a Democrat strategist. If folks who have listened to our show before are really familiar with Ted, in fact, Ted, at this meeting we were at last night, people were saying, "When are you going to have Ted on? When are you
going
to have Ted on?"
They honestly were.
Yeah. So so we did that. But I was texting your partner Arash to set this up, and the autocorrect changed it from Sword of Soros to Sword of Dork.
Listen, my autocorrect. I don't know. Well, then just
jump right into it.
Yeah, tell us what you thought about last night in New Hampshire and what it forebodes for the nomination.
Well, I can tell you my clear first response is actually a melody, and that is dun dun da dun da dun da dun da dun. As we have talked after every single debate and election, primary election or caucus, it's depressing. It's like we're all running to walk off a cliff, and the people that we're thinking aren't going to take us off the cliff have no clue that there's a cliff.
And what's your definition? I mean, I know what I think the cliff is, but what?
Any Democrat, but
right, yeah. What do you think the cliff is? Here, you don't bring me.
Well,
I've
got it's like earthquake. So you can hear.
Well,
me.
You know, as we've talked about before, I think this goes back to July of 15. This is, the rise of Trump when everybody thought that he couldn't be anything. And we talked about the fact that he could be. And part of that was the environment that helped Trump come to be what he is was something within the Republican base. People were upset. It's part of the Tea Party movement.
Right.
And I said back then that Democrats were going to face the same thing. We're just behind a few years. We don't know what that is or when it's going to be. Well, guess what? Hello, we're at the party.
Yeah.
And what we have today with Sanders, and God bless him, maybe you like old men who bark, but this isn't who we need to be leading our party. And quite frankly, I don't think it is representative of who's leading our party. And I don't mean to talk too long, but I'll say this one thing and then come back to it. If you take a look at two things, one, the top three vote getters, so you had Buttigieg and Klobuchar, are moderate D's. So two of the three, and one through, I know, for us it's moderate. and the other data point I think that's worth noting is the percentage of the total electorate that turned out for Bernie is much less than it was. Back, 2016, the last time he ran.
Which really?
Which does not bode well for the farther lefties of our party who think that, oh, no, we can win it, we can win it. The numbers just aren't there.
Right. What about when you looked at the polls, and that's a question I have, is, okay, so Bernie is doing well, appears in some of the morning consult poll that came out today that Bernie is leading somewhat significantly.
7 points in the battleground and the Super Tuesday
states.
Yeah.
And yet, if you add up, like you said, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Biden, they have more. So to me, the big question is, it seems to me, let me ask you this. Elizabeth Sanders, in spite of her great skincare, I think is not.
Elizabeth Warren. This is not so great.
Right. Yeah. Elizabeth Warren doesn't seem to me has that lane for that socialist or that very far left vote. Do you think?
Well, I have a whole theory about why Warren has gone into this decline, which we can
talk
about.
Let's hear it.
Well, my theory about it is two things. One, she was trying to do this strategy of always running, we've talked about this before, a little bit to the right of Bernie.
Right.
So she could say that she was a liberal Democrat, but obviously not a socialist because she used to be a Republican. She believes in market economics, at least how she explains it.
She likes foreclosing on how she liked picking up foreclosed houses to resell. And yeah.
And so thinking she run just a touch to the right of Bernie, could pick up Bernie votes, but at the same time pick up some of the more left of moderate Democratic voters. And that just became such a narrow lane to make happen. But I actually think the moment that her two moments that hurt her the most, one is her rollout for Medicare for All. I mean, that was, you know, a lane that was primarily, well, it was Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew that this was way too left. You know, the support for this thing is really in the tank. And I think she overestimated the value of that. And then she couldn't talk about the cost. She would try to talk about it, and Bernie just, like, waves it off.
Right.
Then the second moment, I think it was a critical mistake, because those moderates that she's trying to pick up are looking at that and going, okay, wait a minute, your numbers aren't even close to adding up. The second thing is, I think her going up to Bernie in that one debate and saying, you know, did you just lie to me or lie about me on national TV? That, bad, 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 bad. And I think it would be bad for anyone, but, you know, whether we like it or not, it's bad for a woman to do it, to an old, barky man.
Right.
And I just think people lost confidence at that point.
Right. Particularly, I think, because CNN was so in the tank for her, right? It was, even I, on behalf of Bernie, was outraged when the CNN person said, hey, did you say this? And he said, no. And then the next thing they did is said to Elizabeth Warren, oh, you did so. I mean, you know, what did you think when Bernie said this? Well, let me go then back to, who do you see as the person who's going to coalesce? I mean, you said you got Klobuchar, Biden. We can't get into your theory about what's happening with Klobuchar and Biden. But Klobuchar, Biden, and all the, I guess the more, Bennett's not one of them anymore. But who do you see, if anyone, kind of becoming the leader of that pack?
Well, this is the challenge. So I would argue that, so, well, first of all, one, let's start with a data point that you can't dispute. And that is, we're talking about a number of delegates that represents, I think, what, 4% when you take in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina.
I don't think it's even 4%. Yeah, no.
You know, yeah, I mean, it's on a good day. And when you get into March, Super Tuesday puts you at 61%. The end of March puts you at 67%. So a lot of this is, you know, really picking at the edges. We're not even talking about senior prom. We're talking about the middle school junior prom.
Yeah.
And it's not amounting to much. So with that said, the moderates, you know, and I actually, the more we get into this, the more I guess I would put myself in this place, really need to coalesce around someone. And I just don't see that happening. Everybody thought it was going to be Biden. I have a tough time seeing how it's going to be Biden. You know, everybody knows. I've been saying this is a campaign where the deck chairs keep sliding to one side, and that should tell you something. And Klobuchar, I think in some ways got lucky in terms of her debate performance in New Hampshire.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, Buttigieg is the little engine that could. You know, he's like, I was thinking about this the other day. It reminds me a little bit of a 21st century Dukakis.
Hmm.
You know, really smart.
Just a little bit. I can see that. Yeah. He reminds me of the kid in fifth grade we all hated. I mean, he was smart and everything else, but all the teachers loved him. Your parents go, isn't that Buttigieg kid great? And I go, no, I hate him. Little dork, you know. I can't stand a little jerk.
Hey.
But and he's a phony. I mean, his problems are that now people discovered he just, you know, he's very articulate saying nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, he just you know. Yeah. Was that an answer? No, it wasn't an answer.
It sounded good, though.
Sounded wonderful. He's obviously a Rhodes Scholar and a very intelligent guy, but there's something loathsome about him.
I catch a lot of heck for this, given that I come out of the gay rights community. But whenever you hear him answer, what I hear, and a lot of folks may not know, there's this high-end, very kind of complex, in-depth consulting company called McKinsey.
Yes.
And I tell you, McKinsey speak, by the end of sentence one, you're asleep.
Right.
It's like I think they run around with a book of synonyms and antonyms, you know, and have Fowlers in their back pocket so they can correct your grammar.
Right.
Hey, you know what? So we call this, Ted, you'll take questions, I'm assuming, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Maybe.
We call this Ask a Democrat. So if you're listening, let me give you the call-in number. It's 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. You can call in and ask Ted a question too. Let me
ask you this. This is my latest, not yet debunked conspiracy theory. When they decided to get rid of the superdelegates, in theory, you know, they said, okay, we don't want to have you, you know, you mucked with the last one and everybody feels like the primaries don't matter because you guys will crook it. They said, okay, sure. We're not going to crook it this time.
And then they said, wink, wink.
I said, they said, look, we just make every primary a proportional vote. No winner take all, none, zero. There is, given the fact that there are lots of candidates and everything else, it's going to be more likely than not that by the time they get the convention, the first round will not be conclusive. I mean, right now, I don't know what the odds are that somebody will get a majority of the votes in the first round, but it's pretty low. And they go, then we come in the second round and we win. You know, we just choose anybody we want.
Ted.
You're Ted.
Yeah, no, and Obama's, what you're talking about.
Oprah. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We'll just rank the thing. And those stupid Bernie people, you know, they all think they're so smart.
It.
Yeah, well, they got to have a choice of Trump or whoever we tell them. And that'll be it. And I think it was. I think it's bizarre to have every primary be proportional because it ends up. In New Hampshire, you said, you know, it's 24 electoral votes out of 4,000. That's how many people there are. There are 4,000 and 24, and it ends up, what, 8-8, you know, 6 or something? I mean, I guess you need two more than that, 9-9-6. But it's amazing. I can't see how anybody can pull off a majority, at least at this point.
No.
Well, the one thing I would say is it's a very – salient point that you're bringing out, and that is with the superdelegates, since they can't vote in round one, but they vote in round two, and if we have, you know, enough folks that are getting, you know, a percentage of the delegates going in and no one can really win in round one,
right.
Round two is where what we call on the farm is when the nut cutting happens.
To the Bernie folks.
And, well,
and that's looking what's going to happen, and what do I see happening, and this is part of my funeral march, bad singing in the beginning, was this is the reason why you see somebody like Bloomberg, you know, taking a shot when he's taking a shot. And a number of us, you know, in the Democratic Party in any other given year would, you know, really be put off by just a billionaire showing up and saying we're going to spend all this money, we're going to win. But we got to go big and we got to go bold. Approaching this, you know, with everyday. Yeah.
Sorry. You give him a box.
Historically, yeah, it's a good point. I don't know. I'm sure Chuck knows the height of all the presidents, so we can ask him. But
five and a half goes in for little Mike.
You know what? We got a question. We can get back because I want to hear your assessment of Biden and the impeachment too. But right now
we got your favorite person, the guy who loves you, adores you, and once he heard you were coming on, I was waiting for this, but it's Barney, your favorite guy.
Hey.
Hey, Barney.
Well, wait a minute, Ted. Hello, Chuck. Hello, Julie. Hello, Ted. I want to know who done the dishes last night, Ted. I want to know who did the dishes because I know you were pissed off when Warren come in where she at. So who done the dishes? Did the person do the dishes or did you? That's all I want to know. Ted,
so could you,
it's okay.
Was it domestic
violence?
I'm with you.
Sorry, my
phone cut out a little bit. If somebody could repeat the question.
Who did the dishes, the Persian or you? Or was it a domestic violence?
The Raj, he's a human being as a thing.
Okay, Barney, you're hitting this nail on the head. Trust me, after the debate last night, particularly after the Iowa caucuses, I heard about it. And for those who don't know who are listening, my other half is a very conservative MAGA hat wearing Republican. So you can imagine we have interesting conversations at home. But I tell you that the Warren, that was, this is like a balloon that was like so thin, and it took one little breeze and it popped and just went down. And, you know, had somebody told me that Amy Klobuchar all of a sudden, you know, with the shaking in the hair, and the fact she treats her staff really poorly, all of a sudden was going to catapult, you know, the top three. But that was that. But yes, Barney.
I want it. I'm going to invite you to the wedding. Don't say nothing bad about Amy. Chuck can come to my wedding of Amy.
It's one of those strange attractions.
If Chuck will dress, Chuck, if you dress like Elvis, you're back in. Buttigieg is going to be my ring boy. Julie, I don't know. We'll do something with you. But so, Chuck or Ted, be nice to Amy because I will uninvite you. Okay? I will uninvite you to the wedding. And by the way, you know what? It has been a long time since I ran out of a house in my boxers and my hat. So I'm waiting, Amy. I'm here for you, baby. I know you're ready. But, by the way,
hey, Barney, with that image, Ted,
in your mind.
I wanted to say something to Ted. Hang on, Ted. So what I was really impressed with you is when I saw you at the rally with, Chuck and Julie, you and Raj, and you got up in Chuck's face, and I was like, you know what? I know Chuck's old and respectful, but Chuck could have just smacked you, and he didn't. And I appreciate your toughness. But by the way, I went from being wearing a math hat to Mike will get it done. My daughter joined the campaign this morning, so we're with her. Ted, take it easy. Hope Raj doesn't get too violent with you, and it's just the way it goes. Elizabeth is a rat. So if you want to stay in my good graces, don't say nothing bad about Amy. Hey, by the way, Chuck and Julie, who did the logo for your little show? Who did your logo, Chuck, Julie? Who did the logo?
Our SEO guy, Seth Drake.
Okay, it's a nice logo. All right, let you guys go. Love all you.
All right, thank you,
Barney. It was our graphics department.
That's right. Hey, anyone else wants to call too? Whether you're for Amy Klobuchar or not, 888-627-6008. Ted, let me walk you back. Joe Biden, what happened there? Did you see that coming?
Didn't everybody see it coming? I mean, it just took longer than everybody thought.
Well, I got to walk gingerly through this. I and a number of people from the beginning thought it was crazy for him to run at his age, and just given kind of where we are in the moment in time and thinking that we could put this up and that's what's going to beat Donald Trump. Is, you know, for all the number of reasons why I'm, you know, bluntly appalled, and now I'm going to hear it when Raj gets home, appalled by Trump and his approach and what he does and how he talks about it and how he uses Twitter. The game of politics is completely different now. Yeah. And to play it in kind of the standard Romney, Dukakis, Clinton, Obama, pick somebody, McCain way, you might as well just stay home.
Well, and then he says weird stuff. Like somebody was saying he's running a Clint Eastwood kind of campaign where he says you're a lying dog-faced pony soldier. And everyone's like,
and you're fat over there. I didn't want to say this. You over there, that woman over there is fat.
That can't be helpful.
Whoa, okay.
And your mama's ugly, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, so is he going to drop out, do you think, or what's going to happen?
After Super Tuesday.
After Super Tuesday. I mean, It presumably there'll be a respectable performance in South Carolina, so there's at least
maybe,
an argument.
Maybe.
And a path. It is what I found fascinating is looking at this today, reading about it and watching it on TV, multiple channels, by the way, not just MSNBC.
And, CNN.
What's interesting to see the numbers around blacks, African Americans, people of color, basically, for Bloomberg. He has his challenges. That tape, whatnot, I mean, that's...
Yeah, that might hurt him a little bit. How Xerox this, sends it to every city. It's the MO. Give it to your police department. All, not some, not a majority, all of the murders and major crimes are committed
Trump didn't say that.
by black people between 16 and 25. So pick them out, throw them against the wall, And that's a great way to introduce himself to the African-American community. They're going to be pouring out with signs, you know,
donations.
Up with Mike, you know, it just, I mean, they need to play that.
Well, and then he's got the Aspen Times, so he's making them. They're refusing to release anymore. So,
I bet they are.
You know, in some ways it would be, you know, like a pedophile priest showing up at a gay event.
Yeah.
Let me go, because we know that's a hard one to answer, Ted, so we won't do it. We got Iggy calling us in.
Comrade Iggy.
Comrade, yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, the comrade won last night, so he's got to be happy.
There you go. Hey, Iggy, good afternoon.
Yeah, comrades, how's it going?
We're good.
Hey, so, Mr. Trimpa, my quick question is, how come the state legislature wants to be parents instead of us? Parents to our kids.
Oh,
because there's
sex ed and that hormone kind of legislation that's getting tossed around and defeated at the Colorado
right.
legislature.
Not defeated, passed.
Well, I mean,
not defeated.
The Republican response to it. Are you up on that, Ted?
So I would repeat the question again, because I've had to move just to make sure that I have good phone reception.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Maybe you can hear me better, Mr. Trump. Here's the deal. There's lots of legislation going through the state legislature now, and basically it's going end around parents, okay, taking away parental rights. And
yeah.
Some of it has to do with sex ed. Some of it has to do with medical treatment, hormonal stuff, or stuff they can do at school without having to inform their parents, okay?
Right
now we have We've got for quite some time laws in place where I think it's kids around 15 years of age do not have to let their parents see their medical records, which makes it really tough if you've got a child with a personality disorder or something like that to get treatment. So what's this big interest? I mean, are we all bad parents? Is this and the legislature's better? What's going on there?
I definitely would say that they're not all bad parents. I think the framework that you're talking about is, part of this is around drugs and around transgender children. Part of this is around birth control with young women. I think part of this is around just sex education with kids and the fact that they're becoming more familiar with sex at a younger age. And a feeling from a democratic perspective that, you know, we, particularly in the schools, should be playing more of an active role. Worrying that some of these kids aren't getting this kind of support when they go home, and also some of it's just the stigma that's involved. I mean, at bottom, it really is just a difference of opinion about what the role of government is and what the role of school districts is, and they're going to be on one side and you're going to be on another. And there's going to be a little bit of common ground on this, but I think on a lot of these issues, they're just not.
I
wish there would be. There would be, but there's just not.
I agree.
So Iggy, we're going to have to work.
What percentage of these children are being ignored by their parents, or when it comes to these birth control issues? Which, as far as other stuff, you know, because basically this kind of stuff can cover up teachers abusing children.
But they're for that. They're for teacher abuse of small children. That's,
the teachers' union.
The teacher's union wants to abuse children, and that's what that's one of their main planks. Let us abuse the children for you.
Covering.
So you don't have to
you
do
don't
it
have
at
to
home.
Outsource it.
Yeah, you don't have to outsource it. We've got all these horny teachers, male and female, who will come after every small child that's halfway attractive. So that's, you know. Let's get it done.
In fairness, I don't think, Ted, that's not the official Democrat.
No,
position.
It's not the official. It's not. It's written down. Kept on the side.
I think it's just a question of balancing. It's a question of making a judgment of the number of kids who don't have the type of parental support that they may need, and need some outlet and somebody to help protect them, versus when you do that, how much of parental control do you take away from parents who actually are doing what parents should be doing?
Isn't the answer on one side, take all the parental rights away and let those gentle, kind people from Planned Parenthood, they're great. You know, if you ever met them these days, you know, talk about hideous human beings, with fangs and everything else coming out, in which you're shoving money in their pockets so they can go after the kiddies. It's an amazing.
You know, as a good liberal, I guess I can say I've given my fangs and my horns to them.
Hey, Iggy, we're going to have to let you go. We got some other folks on the line, okay. But thank you for calling in. Yeah, that's a topic. Ted, we haven't even gone to that kind of stuff. I think we have. I'm going to put my glasses on now. Another phone call, Laurel from Denver. Hey, Laurel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Julie. Hey, Chuck. Hey, guys. What's up?
Good. You sound a little bit like Barney. It's not. You didn't have to change your voice, though. Go ahead.
I sound like Barney. Oh, no.
No, no. Don't shake the table.
All right. Yeah, I wanted to call in today about our voter rolls. I know it's a slight change in topic, but it's actually something that I
can talk about that.
You before. So I actually had recently done some open records requests both to the Secretary of State and to the Denver County Clerk and Recorder, inquiring as to. Well, they respond back to me, and they told me what I suspected. They don't check. They don't check for non-citizens.
No, that'd be voter suppression, total voter suppression.
I'm not sure. But, I think it would have to, as I understand it, it would. You're right. They don't run it through some sort of system that I don't even know that one would exist that they could check it. So you're absolutely right. Now, that'll change. I mean, there's an initiative 76 in Colorado, remember, that would say you have to be a U.S. citizen to vote.
Well, that what's stopping you from voting, though? I mean, you go, OK, so there's lots of laws out there. You can only harvest 10 ballots.
Well, hey, Laurel, you know what, though? We've only got Ted for a few more minutes, so maybe call back because we're back here on Friday and we can talk about that because that's a great.
Right. Well, I'm gonna bird dog this one. I promise I'll talk to
good
you.
For you.
And
good
we're
for
on
you.
With you too. All right, how about let's right, go to Charlene. Hey, Charlene.
Charlene, our manager.
Oh, yeah, our promotions director.
Oh, yes, right. Well, I don't think y'all need one. You're doing such a great job. But I have a question for Mr. Trepa. I want to ask him what he thinks of this scenario that come convention time that delegates are split. Let's say Bernie gets 35, Buttigieg gets 20, Klobuchar 20, Bloomberg 20, and then maybe Tulsi 5. I'm not giving Biden any because I think he'll probably be out by then. But no one's willing to give any of their delegates to anyone else until someone nominates Hillary from the floor. And then they all, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Bloomberg, give their delegates to her, and Tulsi and Bernie get like 40% together. Is that a possible scenario?
First off, you can always call me Ted. Call me Mr. Ted. Today is my birthday, and it makes me feel really
happy. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, I didn't know how. Oh, I didn't know if you were my senior or my junior. So okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. I understand. I just it's I always feel weird when somebody calls me Mr. Trimpa.
Okay.
To directly answer your question, that isn't going to happen. Hillary.
That's not
going
to happen.
It will not. I mean, the Clintons' time has passed.
No, Hillary's everywhere.
This way.
Everywhere.
I can tell you this: if Democrats want to ensure that we're going to lose, then they're going to nominate Hillary.
Yeah.
You know, we've been around this bend. Actually, we've been around this bend twice. and you know, you think of eras in families within Democratic politics. You know, and from my perspective, thank God, the Clinton era is pretty much done. You know, we've been living kind of in the Obama era, and the question is, what is going to be, you know, the leadership team or the folks that are seen as leaders of the party for now? Now, this scenario that you're laying out in terms of percentages of delegates very much could happen on that first. Very much could happen on that first ballot.
And then let me ask you this kind of technical question. If you've gotten delegates and they're pledged to you, but you withdraw and you suspend your campaign, do they still vote for you at the convention, or are they free agents to vote for whoever they'd like?
You know, that's actually a good question. That answer I don't know, because I know if the candidate keeps going, you have to the first round you got to vote as you pledge.
Well. Well, we'll figure that out.
Well, so it sounds like, you know, Charlene, you're asking what we started talking about at the beginning of the show with Ted, and that is Democrats pretty clearly split. And it's who knows? I mean, I think, Ted, you were talking about this. Any number of things, it appears, could could happen. And it sounds like that people like you in the Democrat wing are concerned and worried. And like you were saying, da, 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 you know, about a potential.
That wasn't really a good musical rendition.
Well, but about a Bernie Sanders and his surge, apparently, you know, looking pretty good right now, at least.
At least that's why I do politics.
Yeah,
I
I'm just thinking that William Woods, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and that's kind of his scenario. And I know that I don't think Hillary has given up on it. And
no.
I think she
he'll never give up.
She'll be in the green room, Charlene.
Party.
She'll be lowering into the grave, and she'll be coming.
Yeah, she's she's going to be sitting here, hey, I'm ready, guys, I'm here.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Charlene.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, Ted. You've seemed to kind of warming up to the plutocrat billionaire takeover of Bloomberg. I mean, you indicated, no, you know, we got to go big, and he's big. You know, not wallet size is very, very big, and so I mean, I can't imagine. Last time Bernie went quietly, I mean, about 10% or so, 10 to 14% of Bernie supporters voted for Trump. But do you think everybody's going to go, Bloomberg, why didn't we think about that? He was a great Republican mayor of New York. I mean, what better thing could we have than a billionaire who will do anything? You want open borders? I'll do it. You know, you want your kids controlled, frisked, beaten up and turned over to Planned Parenthood?
A new policy where they just frisk white kids and throw them up against the wall.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. If they're wearing MAGA hats.
All right, we'll let you talk, sorry.
It's true. Oh, no, it's quite all right. And you guys have me, you know, as long as you want me, by the way. So I'll address, because that is true. You know, if you would have asked me a couple of months ago what I thought about Bloomberg was going to do, I'd be like, you know, why would you want a plutocrat? Why would you want a billionaire to do this? We surely can figure something out. But, you know, I have to tell you, after the kind of really decision point moment that really solidified it, I was kind of already there before this, but after the State of the Union, I just sat there, and putting aside the theatrics and the ridiculousness of what he did, and, you know, I'm like waiting for, you know, some other person of color that he was going to recognize in the balcony because he pretty much covered them all.
Gasper Stocko back in Denver want to...
You know, I was waiting for the line in the speech. And some of my best friends are Jewish.
Well, his daughter's Jewish. Yeah. And his grandchildren are Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of that speech, you know, I called a couple political friends of mine and, you know, and said, we're basically, and it rhymes with something around a bird that goes quack, quack. and we're in real trouble. And this is where I think that the rules have completely changed. And we're going to have to go big. We're going to have to go bold. I think the amount of money that it's going to take in order to compete with this is a lot. Is the Sanders base problem real? Absolutely. You know, are there going to be a lot of those folks say, gee whiz, why would we do this? Sanders is campaigning on, you know, we don't want billionaires and plutocrats, you know, taking over control of our political system and wanting to run for president. And the bottom line is you have two things to address that. One, just the who would you rather have?
Right.
You know, which in your eyes, which devil would you rather have? Right. And then the second one, you use the power of money, you know, and advertising and messaging. And does that always work? No.
The answer is almost always if you have enough of it. I mean, Tom Steyer, who nationally, I think he got 3% up in New Hampshire, is the second leading candidate in South Carolina. And because he's done 90% of the advertising in South Carolina. And it's just amazing. Oh, Steyer, we love him, right? Hey, he's an old Southern boy. Tommy Steyer.
So it sounds, Ted, you're saying...
Advertising, I mean, I hate to say it. I hate to say that advertising is everything. But I think if you put enough, if you just saturate the airways and he comes up every 10 seconds on a computer and Michael do it. What I love about his ads, it's almost all just other people talking. At the very end, this disemboweled voice comes going, you know, I'm Mike Bloomberg and I approve this ad. And I own you, by the way.
You probably work for me.
Yeah.
So you think it's going to be him? You think that's what it's going to come down to? If they're going to coalesce and the superdelegates are going to kind of force something through, you know, Bernie will be.
You know, I'm not for sure what necessarily call it for that, but I think there's a path here. It's narrow. Where you could see him coming in with enough.
And
I tell you, and it's going to be, you know, a literal, you know, the back end of a cow show, and it's kind of on it bluntly. I just don't know where that's going to land. But we can't, at least from my perspective, if we end up with the Sanders on the top of the ticket, we might as well start singing songs from McGovern.
Well, there have been conventions in which delegates have walked out, which the 48 convention with Truman, all the Dixiecrats literally walked out. And everybody said, oh, he's dead. You know, he's losing all the Dixiecrats. And after that, Strong Thurmond came in. So he won, you know, okay. You know, I lost the Dixiecrats. Great. I'm still going to win. And he did. I can see Bloomberg coming in and saying, great. You know, the commies left. So just regular citizens. That's regular billionaires are here. So let's go.
Well, I mean, part of what I would say to some of those folks, if they want to walk out like that, is I'll be happy to call you an Uber. I'm not going to call you a Lyft because Democrats like Lyft. They don't like Uber. I'm going to force you into an Uber in order to leave.
Let's go. Hey, we've got our friend Anil Mathai on the line with a question. Hey, Anil, thanks for calling in. Whoop, are you there? Anil? Oh, we might have lost Anil. Okay, he was calling in, I think, through Zoom. So, Ted, let me kind of, you know, talking about that, let me go back to, not even back to, but jump in topics a little bit. What, your thoughts on the whole impeachment thing? I mean, was that a good idea or bad idea?
Yeah, I think of, as Democrats, and then I would say as an American citizen, and I know this is where...
Are they the same thing?
Yeah. It's a subset, right? Democrats are a subset of American citizens. I think that they had, in the end, no choice but to do what they did. And I think that the president's behavior since being acquitted in the Senate validates a lot of what they were talking about when they presented the case about abuse of power.
Wait a minute. I mean, the guys in his office are testifying against him and spying on him. If you had somebody like that in your office, don't you think that you would be justified in moving them out of your office?
To a happier place.
Well, but, I mean, why have whistleblower statutes? Why set it up where...
Whistleblower statute. He is a whistleblower. You crook. They crooked.
Lawfare
crooked the form. Kind of like, oh, yeah, you had to be... No, everybody's eligible to be a whistleblower, the entire federal government. I heard Bobby, told Tommy, who said that George said the president's a jerk. Okay, gun, you get full whistleblower protection.
Wait a minute, but back to my question, though, and because we could probably debate that all day. It looks like the numbers didn't really move very many people.
They did move. It moved Trump.
Right.
I mean, politically, at least to this point.
Which is part of where I was going before you guys lit your hair on fire. Which is fine because we've talked about this before. And so I understand it's like banging a third rail of talk radio or a podcast radio or podcast, whatever it's called. I do believe, and I've said this from the beginning, politically, it's very bad for Democrats. It energizes a base that you already had.
Right.
The fact of time that it takes and, the overwhelming, nauseating amount of media coverage that you get about it, and then all of a sudden, you know, those middle voters. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I think the way we should be thinking about, you know, the independent's not the right word, but the folks that are kind of in the middle, you know, they don't fall within the left, they don't fall within the right. And these aren't the narrow, undecided voters when it comes down to an election. They're just like everyday citizens that have jobs, they have kids, they have activities, and, you know, they vote
like
hopefully, you know, hopefully every now and then, hopefully more regularly than that. You know, they don't have a whole lot of interest in a lot of this, but when they start hearing about it over and over and over and over, they start saying, and you hear this a lot, it's like, you know, why can't everybody just get along? Why can't you just figure this out? Because they're not living, you know, what Trump is saying and tweeting every day. They're not living, you know, what Schiff is saying and doing or Pelosi. And the challenge is that because we, on the Democratic side started the impeachment, were seen as the one who started the conflict. And we can argue about whether that's the case or not. But because of that, politically, it's bad for us. And I've said that from day one.
Yeah.
You know, you have that kind of supply-demand curve of, is there going to be a point where the political cost is less than the value of, from my perspective, would be upholding the, you know, right, the commitment and oath that you took for the Constitution.
What I think has really hurt them is not so much the presidential race, but the 31 Democrats who are in Trump districts. I mean, if he can motivate them, they're not going, I think I'll split my ticket. You know, I like my Democratic representative. You know, he's great on all that phony baloney. No, I mean, he is sunk to the extent that Trump does well in those 31 districts. He sunk those 31 Democrats by just constant. And then they'll kind of go, and we'll keep at it. So if you elect us again, we'll keep on doing it. And your problems? Well, what do we care about your your health care? We want some more impeachment fund. We want Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler to go at it again.
Do it again.
Well, yeah, that's great. We can get some more Vindmans. No. I mean, if you're going to – there's no ticket splitting this next election. They're just going to go no, no, no. If you like Trump
– And in particular, if you have Sanders at the top of the ticket.
Yes.
Yeah.
You might as well, as you're voting down the rest of the ticket, you know, vote for the ship that's sinking.
Right.
And that's what Anil, he was trying to call in on Zoom and he's driving, so it dropped out. Oh. But his question was, Ted, where do you see your party 4 years from now?
In cages, cages along the border. I mean, you know, Trump will declare martial law.
You can go live with Harry and Meghan.
Enormous mass migration into Canada.
Yeah, you know, we'll have a president that can't see over any part of the wall.
Oh!
Because he's so short. And I mean that as, you know, as a positive comment about Bloomberg.
Go ahead.
You know, where we're going to be is in some ways where the Republican Party was, you know, at the beginning of Trump. And I think that what happened with the, you know, discontent and people were really upset and I'm sorry about using boring words, disenfranchised, you know, just not trusting the system, and then acted out Tea Party movement, I think, as part of that. And what came out of that, I would argue, is Trump. Well, I'm not for sure what is for us is going to come out of that. And how do you, and this isn't the best word, but how do you heal that?
Right.
How do you get you know, some consensus again around what the party is? And these primaries represent a infinitesimal percentage of the Democratic voters, primary voters are going to be voting. But if we use this as an indication of what the narrative is, there's more, what I would consider more rational, common sense, moderate thinking in the party than a lot of what you hear on the media and what a lot of people try to stereotype us as.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I have a lot of Democrat friends, and you're absolutely right. I've told this story before. My cousin in Florida is always saying, you'd think in the whole country they could find one decent candidate to run. Mm. And in a way, I mean, Michael Bennett's a nice guy, but I think the Democrat Party made it pretty clear that they're not, I mean, what, he got 800 votes or something? I mean, you know, they don't want somebody like that. And you're right. I don't know. How do you heal from that? I mean, it seems like it's sort of like Bill Kristol saying, we want to heal, right? I mean, no, it's your yesterday's news. I wonder if you guys are in sort of the same thing, if it's going to be this total socialist turn. And I don't know.
Well, let me ask this question, go to more locally. What do you think the odds are that Cory Gardner can pull off the upset of the century?
Now we're going to make you happy. So we're just trying to cheer you up, Ted. We just tried to cheer you up here.
Yeah, I'm going to start off with the some of my best friends are Jewish piece. I love Corey. He's super nice. He's really, really underwater. The two things I would note, though, and these are the two cautionary flags, and I've said this before, one is he's someone you can't help but like, and he's a calming presence. Now, that presents problems with his base, which you guys have talked about before. The second factor is, you know, I love John Hickenlooper, the governor, former governor. but he also can have a tendency to do, you know, Biden-like gaffes. You sometimes don't know what's going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, but he stopped the drinking, so it's okay. That's true.
And so, there, you know, there could be, you know, some moment where, you know, it's not intentional, but something just gets said and then it gets spun out. Now, I think the likelihood of all that is super slim.
Yeah, I think Hickenlooper is a smooth enough and experienced enough politician.
Well, I think if John Hickenlooper was caught with a dead dog, having sex with a dead dog in Cheeseman Park, he can't lose.
Yes, we can say that.
He can't lose. I mean, you guys have rigged this system, so it doesn't matter who the Republicans won. They have zero chance. And what I love is that no matter how much you tell us what you do, and tell us what we need to do.
How you do it. You say, here's our strategy, Republicans.
I haven't heard a single Republican. I heard John Caldera, you know, mentioned it and so forth, mentioned ballot harvesting. I mean, I've run municipal elections, one on coming to the polls and two picking up ballots. And it's a whole different system. And who's important in one election is totally unimportant in the other election. And if everybody going to the polls, you know, your base is important, getting out and appealing to that middle is important. All that matters when you collect ballots and everything else is making connection with that person so he'll give you your ballot. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter the candidates because most of the people, you Democrats go to Alzheimer's patients. You know, what candidate do you have? It doesn't matter. And the Republicans have no ground game. Now, how many days to the election is it now? And even shorter. I mean, it's 250 or something. Hurricane. It's 250 for Colorado. It's like 190. No ground game. I mean, when is Cory Gardner going to do a ground game? After the ballots are in? I mean, you guys, and that's why the legislature is so insane. You know, parents, we hate you. Drug users, we love you. Yeah, you got. That's why normally this time in the legislature go, hey, look, let's moderate it a little. Let's go. None of that is happening because you have so fixed this system, and the Republicans are so dumb and keep on letting you do it. And you talk to these candidates, and you think you're talking Greek to them. Well, we have ballot harvesting. Are we ground game?
That's just my.
Well, as a Kansas farmer, I can just say we have a combine to go out and harvest all this stuff.
Yeah, we're still doing it the way, and I did tassel corn as a kid. Hey, and this is from BBS Radio. If Trump would take a stronger stand on the environment, showing his desire to give less to the wealthy to mine out and control for their own profits, then he'd win over the swing voters, in my opinion. He just needs to show he respects where we live as much as he does, loving America, and not that the left starts to believe him. Just my thoughts. That's my only pet peeve about Trump, and I love Trump.
Is this Don?
This is Don and Doug.
All right, you got the people on California, and this is a good broadcast. This guy's great. Yeah. Let's get a question in here.
And this is just me hypothesizing, my theory of the case around Trump is to think of it as a kind of slicing and dicing. If he would be better on the environment, there are certain people that he could pick up. If he would talk better on some labor issues, these are people that he could pick up. Yeah, there's a swath of folks that may be true. And this is why I think that we have to go bold in order to do this. I think there's this overarching theme that comes with Trump that has nothing to do with his, you know, Twitter rampages and being vindictive after being acquitted in the Senate. And it's, he gets stuff done. I mean, yeah. It's really hard to argue that, you know, a lot of what he's been doing around tariffs hasn't yielded something. Now, we can sit here and nitpick about the extent and the amount of what that substance is. We can sit here and nitpick as to the performance of the economy and who gets the credit for that. But you know what? You know, we've heard that argument, you know, for decades. Oh, no, it was the president before that did it. It was the president before.
Right.
People don't hear that. What they see is, what is my condition? You know, what is the condition today? Who is the president today? This is what I think they're going to do. And then on a couple of issues where I think Democrats, we step in it all the time. And the number one, in my opinion, is immigration. You know, for some odd reason.
What's with the same?
Amy Klobuchar, what border? We don't need borders. I mean, yeah.
I don't know why you guys fight it on the. I get where you're coming
from. Why don't you just lie like you used to? Well, we're for borders. We're for security.
Yeah, which,
we
which
don't want drugs coming in. Now we love fentanyl. All our kids are on fentanyl. Your kids ought to be on fentanyl. I mean, you used to lie, and it was much more effective.
You know, it our position on immigration is way too liberal, and we just continue over and over and over to step in it. And when you take, you know, there are, you know, one or what, two or three push button issues that Trump has figured out. And granted, the way he does it, he doesn't, you know, melodically hit a rail. He takes a sledgehammer out and just pounds the hell out of it. But it, people see it because, you know, they don't watch this stuff every day. They're not picking up New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and reading up, oh my gosh, what is going on today? What did President Trump do? You know, they're worried about getting their kids to school. And we have a steep hill to climb running against that. And anyone who thinks differently should just watch the State of the Union.
Right,
okay, I was
right.
going to ask you this because I know your partner, Arash, is a producer, right? TV producer. And as a former TV person, I was just watching that and not objectively because I like Trump, but I mean, it was just masterful, right? And then they're like, and to the wife of the soldier with the little boy there, right? And a surprise for you. And down comes the soldier home.
And there's Nancy Pelosi mumbling, you know, pre-tearing the papers. I'll get this back. I'll show them.
I mean,
good luck, Nancy. Very good.
I mean, what did you just like get depressed watching that?
No, totally depressed. No, it was worse than watching some of these Democratic debates. As much as I respect the speaker and the things that she's done and the power that she's done,
right?
We can sit here and argue about, you know, the pre-ripping and whatnot. The fact that she did it,
please.
No, on top of it, I agree too.
Ted, we wish we had the old 3-hour show when we have you on because it's been so great. But we want to thank you. You've been wonderful as always. You know, you light up the phones and really get people.
Seriously,
thinking.
People are like, we don't care when you guys are on. When is Ted coming?
Yeah,
when's back?
Ted going to be in?
All right.
Well, listen, I'm happy to do it anytime.
All right.
You
need me.
All right.
We'll be staying in touch. Thanks, Ted. Appreciate.
All right.
And hear from the folks at BBS. In other words, Trump must co-opt this global warning BS movement and use it to his advantage. You know, I think that. Trump is doing a good job, I think, with the economy. And, you know, just I think it's amazing that people are saying, like Ted said, people look at better off and I'm better off. So I'm not likely to change. Right.
And I don't think, you know, I remember they had on the couch and they had, I forget who it was, Newt Gingrich with Nancy Pelosi trying to co-opt the global warming. Back then it was global warming, but now it's climate change. And I understand, you know, our producer out in California, and I think that's, you know, a key issue out there. But here in the hinterland, everybody got hoax, at least if you're a Republican, you know, hoax, lies, just greedy Democrats wanting all the power in the world based on whatever makeup science they have. So I think it's a tough one, because if Trump all of a sudden said, I'll join the Paris Peace Accord, and I'll give another billion, trillion, quadrillion, for the Green Energy Fund, and I think he may gain some Democrats, or I think they hate him so much, they wouldn't.
No.
But he would lose that base that he so relies on. But it's a good question.
And here's another one. I love your show. You're so awesome. Thanks. It's like a lot of people go in to making this awesome. That's great.
Well, I want to talk a couple minutes, Julie. We went last night to the Arapaho Tea Party. Randy's group and others group, and it's a great group of people, just wonderful. And we gave a speech, and that I think that went okay and fine. But what's amazing about the night is that Casper Stockholm come. He's been on this show.
Quit shaking the table. Keep shaking the table.
Well, it's a hurricane.
Yeah, I know. It gets excited.
So Stocker, you know, Casper came in, gave a speech, which was a strange one because he knew he was going to be under attack. Because the forces of Steve House had decided, even though Casper Stockholm has about a 1% chance of winning, I mean, he raised $20,000 total. I think the grassroots loves him, but that's, you know, it's a big congressional district when you have no money, no staff.
Let me just say this before you get this, because I think that I don't know how much Steve House, I think Steve House had a representative there. I just want to make this clear because we're going to have Steve House on the show.
And I want here. Steve House on the
right.
show.
So
and,
I don't,
and we've
I don't,
had Steve House before. I like Steve House.
This wasn't Steve House. I think this was a Steve House bad representative here. We've only got a couple minutes here.
Well,
so.
I got that. If you wouldn't quit talking, it would work out. And so, you know, after a couple of nice questions from people, this guy who came in and he looked like very wealthy, well-to-do, good-looking, articulate, and very Southern voice to him, gets up and starts screaming at Casper Stockholm, screaming, don't you tell me about Steve House. I want to know this line item. You paid that to yourself. You know, and Casper says, I've taken a minimalistic salary. I don't have any money anyway. And this guy's just screaming at him. And the whole room turned on him. Everybody in the room got, who is this SOB? If he represents Steve House, I hate Steve House. And it was the most, people got up and said, I gave money to Casper Stockholm. And
Stockholm.
And if he gave a little, you know, he needed some because he's allowed to under the law. I don't need it from a multi-billionaire, millionaire, Steve House, to say we're going to attack him. And it was, he lost for Steve House. Everybody in the room, they did a poll afterward, and there were three of them from the House campaign. And only three others in the entire room voted for him. I mean, it was an amazing performance. And I've seen the time Roger Edwards decided to run against Mike Coffin. They went to destroy him. Anil Mathai. They went to destroy him. Why does the establishment? And then when they finally get out there, right, when they finally face the Democrat, they go, what's he tussy? They go Walker Stapleton. But they destroy the base. They destroy the grassroots. And they think they're so cool. They think we're tough. We showed that little black guy what was what. Yeah, we told him, you know, we had our accountant staff from some big accounting firm go over his ones and find everything. It was the dumbest political move I've ever seen. And Gary Kirkland, he's a bright, intelligent, capable guy. But if he's going to pull that act around, Steve House can forget about any of his support once he overwhelms him with all his money.
All right, and we're going to have. I wasn't trying to interrupt you there, but like we got 1 minute here.
One minute.
That was a minute ago. Hey, want to thank everybody. Here's some ways. You can always follow us because we live stream this on Facebook. Our Facebook page, Chuck and Julie. Also follow us on Twitter, Chuck and Julie One, because I post on Facebook and on Twitter when our updates and stuff are there. You know, and to get the podcast, go to chuckandjulie.com. or bbsradio.com/Chuck and Julie Show. And thanks to the folks at BBS Radio, you can even now say, Alexa, play Chuck and Julie.
Yeah, that's great.
Very cool. So want to thank everybody again. Our thanks to Ted Trimpa. That'll do it for us today.
We'll be back on Friday.
On Friday. Have a great day.